Have you ever wondered why exactly it is that things usually sound better at home than they do on stage, in auditions, or even in lessons? It's easy to chalk it up to nerves or assume that you just have to practice more or get more performance experience. And sure, those things certainly are part of the puzzle, but a lot of times that's not really the true root cause. If you've been confused by the inconsistency of your performances, I put together a free 4-minute quiz called the Mental Skills Audit, which will help you pinpoint your mental strengths and weaknesses and figure out what exactly to adjust and tweak in your preparation for more consistently optimal performances. You can take the Mental Skills Audit online at bulletproofmusician.com/MSA. That's MSA for Mental Skills Audit. And again, it's 100% free, and it'll take just 4 minutes to get your results emailed to you as a PDF. This is Noah Kageyama, and you're listening to the Bulletproof Musician Podcast. Every Sunday morning, we'll take a look at a new research-based tip or technique to help you practice more effectively or perform better under pressure. And on the first Sunday of every month, I'll have a guest from the music, sport, or research world who will share their insights on how we can all be a little more awesome in the practice room and on stage. One quick thing before we get started with today's episode. I'm taking a short writing break the next couple weeks, so in the meantime, I thought I'd share a couple of my favorite articles from the archives, in case you might have missed them when they were originally released. Today's article goes back to 2014, and is about a study which identified 8 specific things that the most effective practicers among a group of university pianists did differently. As my kids were begrudgingly practicing their taekwondo patterns the other night, I caught myself telling my oldest that he had to do his pattern 5 times before returning to his video game. My goal, of course, was not for him to go through the motions of his patterns 5 times like a pouty zombie, but to do it 1 time with good form and authority. But the parent in me finds it very reassuring to know that a certain number of repetitions or time has gone into something. Beyond the erroneous assumption that this will automagically solidify his skills somehow, it feels like a path to greater discipline, and a way to instill within my kids some sort of work ethic that will serve them well in the future. Some degree of time and repetition is necessary to develop and hone our skills, of course, but we also know on some intuitive level that to maximize gains, we have to practice smarter, not harder. But what the heck does that really mean anyway? What exactly do top practicers do differently? A group of researchers led by Robert Duke of the University of Texas at Austin conducted a study several years ago to see if they could tease out the specific practice behaviors that distinguish the best players and most effective learners. 17 piano and piano pedagogy majors agreed to learn a 3-measure passage from Shostakovich's Piano Concerto No. 1. The passage had some tricky elements, making it too difficult to sight read well, but not so challenging that it couldn't be learned in a single practice session. The students were given 2 minutes to warm up, and then provided with a 3-measure excerpt, a metronome, and a pencil. Participants were allowed to practice as long as they wanted, and were free to leave whenever they felt they were finished. Practice time varied quite a bit, ranging from 8.5 minutes to just under 57 minutes. And to ensure that the next day's test would be fair, they were specifically told that they may not practice this passage, even from memory, in the next 24 hours. When participants returned the following day for their test, they were given 2 minutes to warm up and then asked to perform the complete 3-measure passage in its entirety without stopping, 15 times, with pauses between attempts, of course. Each of the pianist's performances were then evaluated on 2 levels. Getting the right notes with the right rhythm were the primary criteria, but the researchers also ranked each of the pianist's performances from best to worst, based on tone, character, and expressiveness. That led to a few interesting findings. 1, practicing longer didn't lead to higher rankings. 2, getting in more repetitions had no impact on the ranking either. And 3, the number of times they played the passage correctly in practice also had no bearing on their ranking. What did matter was how many times they played it incorrectly. The more times they played it incorrectly, the worse their ranking tended to be. And also, the percentage of correct practice trials did seem to matter. the greater the proportion of correct trials in their practice sessions, the higher their ranking tended to be. Three pianists' performances stood out from the rest and were described as having, quote, more consistently even tone, greater rhythmic precision, greater musical character, purposeful, dynamic, and rhythmic inflection, and a more fluid execution. And upon taking a closer look at the practice session videos, the researchers identified 8 distinct practice strategies that were common to the top pianists, but occurred less frequently in the practice sessions of the others. Here they are in the words of the researchers. Number 1, playing was hands together early in practice. Number 2, practice was with inflection early on. The initial conceptualization of the music was with inflection. Number 3, practice was thoughtful, as evidenced by silent pauses while looking at the music, singing or humming, making notes on the page, or expressing verbal ahas. Number 4, errors were preempted by stopping in anticipation of mistakes. Number 5, errors were addressed immediately when they appeared. Number 6, the precise location and source of each error was identified accurately, rehearsed, and corrected. Number 7, tempo of individual performance trials was varied systematically. Logically understandable changes in tempo occurred between trials. In other words, they slowed things down to get tricky sections correct. And number 8, target passages were repeated until the error was corrected and the passage was stabilized, as evidenced by the error's absence in subsequent trials. Of the 8 strategies above, there were 3 that were used by all 3 top pianists, but rarely utilized by the others. In fact, only 2 other pianists, ranked number 4 and number 6, used more than 1 of these 3 strategies. Specifically, strategy number 6. The precise location and source of each error was identified accurately, rehearsed, and corrected. Strategy number 7. Tempo of individual performance trials was varied systematically. Logically understandable changes in tempo occurred between trials. And strategy number 8. Target passages were repeated until the error was corrected and the passage was stabilized, as evidenced by the error's absence in subsequent trials. So what's the common thread that ties these 3 together? Well, the researchers noted that the most striking difference between the top 3 pianists and the rest was how they handled mistakes. It's not that top pianists made fewer mistakes in the beginning and simply had an easier time learning the passage. The top pianists made mistakes too, but they managed to correct their errors in such a way that helped them avoid making the same mistakes over and over, leading to a higher proportion of correct trials overall. The top performers utilized a variety of error correction methods, such as playing with one hand alone or playing just part of the excerpt, but there was one strategy that seemed to be the most impactful: slowing things down. After making a mistake, the top performers would play the passage again, but slow down or hesitate without stopping right before the place where they made a mistake the previous time. This seemed to allow them to play the challenging section more accurately and presumably coordinate the correct motor movements at a tempo they could handle, rather than continuing to make mistakes and failing to identify the precise nature of the mistake, the underlying technical problem, and what they ought to do differently in the next trial. I don't know if this is a universal thing, or maybe just my teachers, but I do remember being told to slow down on more than one occasion. So here's some evidence that maybe they were really onto something, and I probably should have been a little more diligent in following their suggestions. You can find links to this week's study and other resources like practice hacks and the audition cheat sheet at bulletproofmusician.com/blog. And if you found the episode helpful, please share it with a friend or practice buddy who you think might also enjoy experimenting with this during the coming week.